So this week, Parshat Vayera is filled with lots of amazing things. Vayera begins, of course, with Hashem's speech to Moshe, reassuring him and giving him, should we say, an adrenaline push to go back and speak to Bnei Yisrael after the disappointment of the first address to Paro, and the famous terms of Geula, which we know but maybe don't know all that well, Votzeitivi, Tzaltivi, Galtivi, Lakachti, and of course Veheveti, and Moshe being Aral Sfatayim. All of these are topics that we've covered in earlier years. And then, of course, the Makot gets started. And the Makot, both individually and as a sequence, have their own fascination. We've talked in the past about the Chartumim. But towards the beginning of the Parsha, there's this strange sort of square peg in a round hole that shows up, which evokes a little bit of the end of Bereshit and a little bit of the beginning of Shemot and a little bit of Parshat Pinchas or the beginning of Bamidbar with the census, a little bit of it, and it's almost like a teaser. But at the end of the opening section, when Hashem gives the four or five phrases of Geula and tells Moshe to go, and then we have the following. So we'll take a look at it. This is at the end of that section. Bo daber, I just want to do it to give context. Bo daber el paro melech Mitzrayim, v'yishalach bnei Yisrael me'artzo. And this is something we hear over and over from the end of Parshat Shemot, coming to Paro and giving the message, and which is, of course, he should send them out. And of course, what is Aral Sfatayim? Okay, but with that background, we then have what ends up in our tradition, the end of the first Aliyah. Right, and it gives the command. Now, following this, this odd passage, you have the odd passage we're going to focus on. You have which is almost exactly a repeat of Psukim Yod through Yod Bet that we just read. And this is where we have an example. We have a couple of cases like this in Bereshit, where the text veers off onto a tangent and then sort of does a recap of where we're at. At the end of last week's episode, here's what we did. So to bring us back into the flow, example of this is Bereshit Lamed Zayin and Lamed Tet. At the end of Lamed Zayin is Yosef being sold to Potiphar, and Lamed Tet reminds us that we sold to Potiphar because we have the whole story of Yehudah and Tamar in the middle. So the same way, we have our odd section in the middle, and here it is. Eile Rashi Beit Avotam. And by the way, right away you could ask, besides what's this doing here, Beit Avotam of whom? There's no context. You know, as if it had said, "Ve'ela Shmo Bnei Yisrael Ve'im Mitzrayma Eit Yaakov Yishu Etova Ruven Shmo," etc., and then "Ela Rashi Beit Avotam." So these are the heads of their families or the heads of their households, of whose. Now it's pretty clear from the rest of it they're talking about Bnei Yisrael, but that's where it gets doubly weird, because we start with Ruven, Bnei Ruven B'chol Yisrael Chanuchu Falu Chatzon Rachami Ela Mishpachot Ruven. So this is not all the members of Reuven at this time, not by a long shot. All members of Reuven, we're talking in the tens of thousands. But this is rather the heads of households, that these people are no longer alive. These are the sons of Reuven who were listed back in Bereshit with the group of the family that came down, the tribe, mini tribe that came down from Canaan with Yaakov. Those are the same names. So now they're not individuals, they're not little kids, they are the families, the Chetzron family, the Karmi family, etc. Uvnei Shimon, and again, the same list, Yumuel, V'yamin, V'od, V'yachin, V'tzohar, V'sha'ul ben Akranit, exactly like we had in Vayigash, Eile Mishpachot Shimon. Now, why is this list here, and why is this list replicating what we saw in Bereshit, is its own question. But the stranger part is that here we feel like we're continuing that list, and then we have the larger question: what's doing here? The Eile Shmot Bnei Levi LeToldotam Gershon Ukat Umirari. And at this point, we're still in the same Vayigash mode, and suddenly we get a new piece of information, Ushnei Chayei Levi Shaba Ushloshim Miat Shana. Levi lived till 137. This is not something we heard earlier, because, by the way, Levi is still alive earlier, although the Torah certainly could have told us how long he lived. Here we're told he lived 137. And then we veer off further from the Breishit model, which is B'nei Gershon Livnim V'Shimin L'Mishpachotam. And then Uvnei Kehat Amram V'Yitzar V'Chevron V'Uziel. And again, Ushnei Chayei Kehat Shalosh Ushloshim Miat Shana. So first of all, we get Gershon's kids, right? We did not have in Breishit. We get Kahat's kids, we did not have in Breishit. And then suddenly we're told that Kahat lived 133. We're not told how long Gershon lived. And going back one step, we're not told how long Reuven or Shimon lived, but we're told how long Levi lived, and we're told how long Kahat lived. Now, to finish the picture, Uvnei Meraim, Machli, Mushi, Elam, Mishpachot, HaLevi, the Tolo Tam. Good, very nice. Wrapped up, and we expect now to hear about Eila Mishpachot Yehuda. Don't hold your breath. Vayikach Amram, suddenly in Pasuk Chaf, Vayikach Amram et Yocheved Dodato lo Leisha. And now, by the way, we're going to find out who the unnamed father and unnamed mother of that baby who ended up getting named Moshe, who they are. It's Amram, who, as we saw a second ago, is one of the children of Kahat, evidently his eldest. And he took Yocheved Dodato, which means Yocheved is his Dada, which means his father's sister, which means she is directly a daughter of Levi, as we saw, Bat Levi. Vatelad lo et Aharon v'yet Moshe. All right, so now it's kind of filling in the blanks from the earlier story of the birth of Moshe, and tells us that besides the unnamed sister who was there, whose name we're still not going to get here, there's a brother there who we weren't told about earlier. We've been told about him since in the interaction at the Snan afterwards, but not in that birth story. And then we're told again about an age, a span of years, and that is Amram. So we're told Levi 137, Kahat 133, Amram 137. All right. And now, Uvnei Yitzhar, Korach, Venefek, V'Zichri. We're told Yitzhar, remember Yitzhar is one of Kahat's kids, Kahat's second kid. So Amram, we're told that he has Aaron and Moshe, and he married Yocheved. Yitzhar, we're told, he has kids who are Korach, Nefeg, and Zichri. Uvnei Uziel, notice there's no B'nei Chevron here. We're not going through the list comprehensively. Amram, we're told about Aaron and Moshe, not told about Miriam. We're also told Amram's wife. Yitzhar, we're not told who his wife is. We don't know if he has daughters, but we're told about three sons, Korach, Nefeg, and Zichri. Chevron is skipped. And Uziel, we're told, Mishael, Ve'el, Safan, Ve'sitri. Three sons. Okay. And now we continue on with this strange zigzagging information, which is both odd in its existence, odd in what it states and what it leaves out, and even in its sequence. Vayikach Aharon et Elisheva bat Aminadav achot Nachshon lo Leisha. As if we should have heard about Nachshon already. So Nachshon, who is the son of Aminadab, who is from Shevet Yehuda, but we're not told that here, has a sister named Elisheva, and Aharon marries Elisheva. Right? And by the way, we already know that Moshe married Tzipporah, and we already know that he has one son, Gershon. We'll find out later about Eliezer. Okay, so the family's filling out. By this time, we've even forgotten about the fact that there's a Yisachar and a Zevulun and a Yehuda and Naphtali and Dan. We've forgotten about everybody else, which means that when we finish this, we got to look back and say, what is this whole thing about? So now, by Uvnei Korach, suddenly we're switching back and going to Yitzhar's grandsons. Amram, we got some grandsons, which was Aaron's four kids. Yitzhar, we're going to get some grandsons, which is B'nai Korach. Now, we're not getting Nefeg's kids or Zichri's kids. We're getting Korach's kids. Asir ve'al kanava ve'asaf. Eile mishpachot ha-korchi. That's the Korach family. And we're done with that. And then we go back to Amram, and we now get a great-grandchild. Ve'lazar ben Aharon lakach lo mivnot putiel lo li'isha. All right, this is now Aharon's son, Elazar, who we heard about, son number three. He marries one of the daughters of a guy named Putiel. There's the Midrashim about Putiel, but simple pshat, it's a guy named Putiel. Vatelebo at Pinchas. Now, did Nadav marry? Did Avihu marry? We don't know. Did Itamar marry? almost assuredly. Did Elazar have any other kids besides Pinchas? We don't know. So we're told about Elazar only, and we're told about Pinchas only. Now that line is a little bit unfair, because what's Ela? Ela Rashi Avot Alvim Mishpachotam means these are the heads of the Levite families. But is that true about Nefeg? Is Nefeg the head of a family? Is Pinchas the head of a family? Who's the Ela referring to? All right, and I'm just pointing out along the way, there are so many odd things here, but this is a parsha. Zevi and I were talking about this before the shiur. This is a parsha that is often overlooked because it's such a strange piece in the middle of the Yitziat Mitzrayim narrative, which is about Moshe and Paro and Makot and Moshe's speech and signs and wonders, and suddenly we get this genealogy. And it's so strange that often what people do is they look at it and they kind of like, it gives me a headache to think about it. I move on to something that I'm more comfortable with. And then we get to the end of this passage. Who Aharon u'Moshe? That's a strange thing to say because it should be Haim Aharon u'Moshe. But who Aharon u'Moshe seems to mean that's the same Aharon u'Moshe. Shamar Adonai lahem otzir b'nei Yisrael mi'eretz Yisrael motzir b'otam. Haim. Now, Hamadabrim Aparo Melech Mitzrayim, Zib Bnei Yisrael Mitzrayim, Hu Moshe V'Yaharon. All right? So this is the summary of this piece, which is, they're the ones talking to Paro to take Bnei Yisrael Mitzrayim. That's Moshe and Aharon, Aharon and Moshe, Moshe and Aharon. Beautiful. And then, V'Hi B'Yom Dibar Adonai Moshe V'Yaharon Mitzrayim. That's the end of that. And then, the next parasha takes us back to where we were before. Hashem says to Moshe, go. So it's as if we have the following, just begadol. Hashem speaks to Moshe and tells him to go to Paro. And this is the message he's supposed to give. If you remember, we were already told that Aharon is going to be Moshe's spokesperson, not only to Zikne Yisrael, but also to Paro. And then there's this interruption with this weird half-third genealogy that gets expansive in some places and gives us spans of years in some places, and then drops after Levi. We don't hear about anybody from any other Shevet, except for the fact that we know that Aminadab was from Yehudah, but that's it. And it goes through the bona fides, if you will, about Aharon and Aharon's sons and Aharon's grandson and Moshe and other members of the family. And then it drops, and then we go back to the narrative. I am sure that all of you in the past have looked at this and said, I don't get what this is doing here. But then got so preoccupied with Dam and Sfardeh and Kinim, et cetera, that perhaps you dropped off. So we'll take a look at how a couple of the Rishonim addresses. I'm going to start with Ibn Ezra. Ibn Ezra says, Eila Rashe Beit Avotam, in the introductory line, he says, Shav el Bnei Yisrael Haniz Karim Lamala. He says, who's the Avotam? It's going back to Bnei Yisrael, who are mentioned earlier. Now, somebody, I don't know who it is, in parentheses, put in that it's referring to this Bnei Yisrael right here. But maybe not. Maybe the Ibn Ezra says that it's referring to this, the beginning of the book. Or any of the other mentions of Bnei Yisrael in the meantime. And saying, okay, and now we're going to fill in who the heads of the families are. And he points out again, these are the ones who came down to Mitzrayim. And then he points out, it starts with Reuven. Now, of course, before we get to the Ibn Ezra and look into the Kishkas of the Ibn Ezra, we part of the problem with this list is not only that it's incomplete, but where it starts. It starts with Reuven, then does Shimon, then Levi, and stops. Now, instinctively, why would it be Reuven, Shimon, and Levi? What would be your first thinking about that? Why wouldn't it be Yehuda, Naphtali, and Levi? Why is it Reuven, Shimon, and Levi?
No, order of birth.
What?
It's starting from the order of
birth. Birth order. So we start with Reuven, who was the Bechor, and yet turned out to be quite the garnished relative to everybody else, and got tossed out. Then it goes to Shimon, who along with Levi also got tossed out. So, yes, it's birth order, but on the other hand, it's not in any order of significance. Meaning they're not the most significant tribes by any measure. So notice what the Ibn Ezra is sensitive to that and says, Hechel mi Reuven, he started with Reuven, lo nishar lo kavod rak lehitiaches. The only kavod Reuven had was to say, officially, I've got the big B on my back. I'm the Bechor. That's about all I got, right? That's Pasuk Divaramim. I'll show it to you in a second. Ve'elar bar panav hem yordei Mitzrayim. So Chetzron, Kamin, etc. The four that are listed are the ones who came to Mitzrayim, right? And then he says one of these families got disappeared, and therefore they're not mentioned in Pinchas, okay? And he goes through, and then he says, B'nei Levi. He's kir eila shnei shvatim batchila, bavur shem gedolim Levi. Why were Reuven and Shimon mentioned before Levi? Because the Ibn Ezra is clear. It's clear to the Ibn Ezra, like it's clear to anybody else, that this story, this piece is about Levi. It goes into details about Levi, gives spans of years of Levi and Kahat and Amram. It's about Levi. So why Reuven and Shimon? Because Reuven and Shimon are older than Levi. To which our response has to be, so what? And then he says, Ki Levi hu ha'ikar. Levi is the main thing about this. Because the whole purpose of this is to tell us who Moshe and Aharon are, to give us their yichas. You know who Moshe and Aharon are descended from? Ho, ho, ho. Right? Very nice. But is that enough of a reason to put Reuven and Shimon in here? All right? And then he says it mentioned Gershon, Katu, Merari, because they're also mentioned by Yigash. All right, and he's kir chaye Levi, below he's kir chaye shar shvatim, bavur kvod Moshe v'Aaron. So why does it tell us how long Levi lived? And then you would translate, add that, why does it tell us how long Kahat lived, etc., just for honor of Moshe and Aaron. All right, again, the yichas of Munu, you see who Moshe comes from, his great-great-grandfather was a guy who lived 137. His grandfather lived 130. His father lived 137. It's great. Okay, so here's the basic Jason questions that we have, right? Which is, why is this genealogy presented here at all? Why did it stop at Levi? Why are only specific people mentioned and not others? Again, I asked this earlier. And the lifespans of those three are listed. Why? So I'll take a look at what a couple of other passages that may enlighten us. We saw in Bereishit. Again, this is the same list. You saw B'nai Reuven, the same four. B'nai Shimon, the same five. Right, B'nai Levi, the same three, all clear. We also have at the beginning of our parsha of say, for Shemot Ve'elishmot B'nai Yisrael. So that may be the background for this. But again, what's the connection? So I'm going to take a look at four other comments here, and then I'm going to suggest something else. And by the way, there are many. This is, again, a sign of how mysterious and odd this parsha is. There are perushim all over the place on it because it's enigmatic. What's it doing here? So the Rashbam says, Elam Mashavei Tavotam, he quotes a Mechilta, although I couldn't find the Mechilta, it's in the Pirkei Rabbi Elazar, you can find it. It says, Elu Shloshah Shvatim Sheginau Tam Yaakov Beit Tzavato. Reuven, Shimon, and Levi were the three Shvatim who didn't get a bracha, they got a Mishaberach from Yaakov. Right? Reuven, Pachas, Kamayim, Shimon, Levi, Achim, Klei Hamas, etc. Yichsam Ata Katuv Lodiyah Shechashuvim Hem. So this is like rehabilitation. Reuven, Shimon, and Levi got really nailed in the deathbed scene of Yaakov. So here it's like kind of restoring their honor. Well, lefi hapshat ad Moshe v'Aaron utzrach liyachez kan, and he takes a position sort of like the Ibn Ezra, which is the need was to be miyachez up to Moshe and Aaron because they're the core, right? And therefore we start Reuven, Shimon, and Levi because that's the order. I'm going to later pick up a leaf from this tree that the Rashbam is planting. It says Korach and Uziel's son and Pinchas are mentioned later in the Torah. That's why they had to be mentioned here. But I think we have to take this a little bit further. The Bechor Shor takes it a little bit broader. And he says, "Atachozer l'tchilata dvarim l'sader kol adavar mitchilato alaseder chlusaper kitzivam haKodesh Baruch Hu Yisrael l'tziam." This is now recapping, and what they're supposed to do. Umfaresh mihen. So it says, "Here's who we're talking about." Umi told otam v'rosh beit avotam. Who are the families? Who are the heads of the families? Mitchil b'Reuven, manach magel Levi. Levi monezar rosh Levi. So the Reuven, Shimon, Levi. Once you get to Levi, let's go down to Moshe and Aaron, and Bnei Aaron, and even Aaron's grandson, right? All of these people, in other words, in order to sort of recap the story and tell us who is it we're dealing with, who is this Bnei Israel that Moshe has to convince and then lead out. But it stopped after Levi. And then he quotes Rabbeinu Shmuel. And Rabbeinu Shmuel here means evidently Shmuel ben Chofni. Ki lachen lo mana b'nei Chevron. Why? Remember I mentioned Chevron's left out. We had b'nei Korach, right? We had, sorry, b'nei Amram and Uziel, but we no mention of b'nei Chevron, right? Maybe they weren't important people, right? Sorry. Rabbeinu Shmuel Peresh, Kilachen Lomana B'nei Chevron, Shlonizkru B'shum Makom B'Torah. They just don't show up anymore. Shlomana Ela Otam Shinizkru B'Torah. So this is again what the Rashbam says, that the people who are listed here are people who show up later in the story. And therefore, Korach, for instance, and Korach mentions his other brothers, right? And B'nei Uziel, we'll see why. The tour, by the way, the tour, just to give a little plug for the tour, the tour is chiefly known in the area of Parshanut as the author of the Baal HaTurim. That's why he's called the Baal HaTurim. He's the tour. He wrote the tour. But the Baal HaTurim wrote two commentaries. There's one that's very popular, which is very short, and it's basically Gematriot and Sofei Tevot and all sorts of other interesting devices, with all sorts of hidden messages. And it's popular because it's printed in most of the Mikra Gedolot, because it's small. The Tor, on the other hand, wrote a comprehensive commentary, which is called the Long Tor's Commentary, which is really very deep stuff. And it's in, very much in the tradition of the Tosafist school of Parshanut, which is fascinating material. And he says, the whole point was to get to Levi. So in order to make sure nobody thinks Levi's the Bechor, they went in order, Reuven, Shimon, and Levi. But the point is to get to Levi, right? And he continues on. There's other things that are of interest here, but I'm keeping an eye on the clock because I want to get us to there. And then somebody who you've never seen me quote, Kliakar, the 16th century, I believe, has the following very a fascinating take on this, but this shows you how challenging this parsha is, that again, we have to take a look and try to figure it out. Watch where he goes. Elo Hashem Beit Avotam. Lefi Sheratza Hashem Laten Oraita Tlita. God wanted to give, this famous, based on the famous Agadah in Shabbat, that the Hahu Dar Lila Darshan Brich Rachmana Diyahiv Urim Tlita, La'ama Tlita, B'yoma Tlita, Al Yidei Tlita. God gave the threefold Torah, that's Torah Nevim Tuvim, to the threefold nation, Kohen Levi Israel, on the third day of Hagbalah, through a third, Moshe was the third in birth order, as all the thirds. And they Shevet Mishulash Beharbe Minei Shilush, Shinizkru Bagmara. So he, through the third tribe that had all of these threes in them, right? Alkeni Tchiliv Dok, Brashe Beit Avotam, Atzar Ruvain, Arba Mishpachot. So Ruvain has four families. Shimon has five. What's four and five? That's nine. And Levi, three. Oh, therefore, we finally found Levi. Levi's our three. Now, you could have stopped and said, there's 12. And we love the number 12. Instead, he goes, Alkein Pasal Vishonim Vachar Belevi Amishulash Pamayim. So instead, he comes to Levi, who Levi is not only the third, but Levi's also got three kids. Right, I just wanted to give you a sense of how far afield people are willing to go in order to explain this very strange parasha. I think that there's something else going on in this parasha. And I want to take, as I said, a page from the Rashbam and from the Bechor Shor, who said the people who are singled out for mention here are people who show up later in the Torah. That's why Mishael and Al-Safan play a role, so they get mentioned. And let's take a look at those mentions. But I think it's also going to explain another piece that wasn't explained with that, which is why Reuven, Shimon, and Levi are here, and none of the other tribes are mentioned. It's not just order, it's something else. If you take a look back at Moshe's formative present, the presentation of Moshe's formative years, that's when he's in Egypt, he's growing up in the palace, and he hasn't yet run away. And if you recall, the first day he goes out to see his family, to see what's happening to his brothers, and he sees an Egyptian hitting a Jew, and an Ivri, Moshe intervenes, kills the Mitzri, buries him after looking around, make sure nobody's watching. What happens the second day? He comes out and he sees two Ivrim fighting, and he says to one guy, Rasha lama teker reyacha. We're familiar with that. What do they say to him? Mi samcha la'ish sar v'shofet aleinu. Who made you a judge over us? Now, by the way, they're talking about the Prince of Egypt. I know, because that's what the movie's called. And yet they say, well, who appointed you? And this is something that Moshe is going to experience for the rest of his career. People not accepting Moshe's place and his role. Who are these two people? So all we're told is two Ivrim and Nitzim. Interesting, Chazal say it's Datan and Aviram. That's in source 10. Whether it's Datan and Aviram is not the point. The point is that Moshe faces these sort of challenges, but the Midrash here is actually speaking on a much deeper level, as we'll see. Now, when are Mishael and Elzaphan, the children of Uziel, who get mentioned in this list, when do they show up? When Nadav and Abihu die, and Elazar and Itamar take over for them, and they're all listed there, Mishael and Elzaphan are the two Levim who come in and drag the bodies out. So this is substantiating what the Rashbam, the Bechor Shor said, is that those people who later on are going to show up in the Torah, we want to know who they are, so they're listed in this mini genealogy. Okay. If you remember, the Menazra started out by saying Reuven is only listed as a Bechor because that's his birth order. He has no other Yichus. And that's the Pasuk that he referenced here in Divrei Yamim. Uvnei Reuven Bechor Yisrael Kiwa Bechor Bechalo Yitzu Avim Ninam Bechor Atol Vnei Yosef Ben Yisrael Velo Li Yachis La Bechora. Meaning, Yosef got the rights of the Bechor, but he just doesn't get called Bechor. That's what Reuven. Reuven is Bechor in name only. Okay. But now let's take a look. Who are the rebels who really give Moshe the toughest time? Korach, Ben Yitzhar, Ben Kat, Ben Levi, back to our list, and Datan and Aviram, Bnei Eliav, Von Ben Pelet, all of them who are Bnei Reuven. Who is the hero at the end of Sefer Bamidbar? Pinchas, Ben Elazar, Ben Aaron HaKohen. Right, very nice. So far we've seen the Rashbam substantiated that Mishael and Elzaphan are going to play a role later, so we have to mention them. And that Pinchas is going to play a role later, so we have to mention him. Doesn't mention that Nadav, Avihu, Elazar, and Itamar all have to be mentioned because they're part of the same scene with Mishael and Elzaphan. So we understand now that this genealogy is giving us those members of Levi who are going to play a critical role in the later story of the Torah and presenting them to us now. But that still doesn't explain why it's here. Why do we need here, punkt, just before we get rolling with the Yetziat Mitzrayim narrative, why do we need to be told, oh, these are Levim you're going to see later on in the story? And it still doesn't explain the Reuben and Shimon introduction. But notice that I've included Datan and Aviram twice already in this presentation. There's somebody else I want to mention here, somebody who really doesn't get a lot of press for very good reason. Who did Pinchas kill? He killed Kozbi Bat Nisi Midyan, Kozbi Bat Sur, right? And who else did he kill? He killed Zimri Ben Salu Nisi Beit Avla Shimoni, who was evidently at the forefront of the Moabite whoring that led to that terrible plague and the death of 24,000 people just before we're about to cross over into Eretz Yisrael. It's Shevet Shimon. Look at Shevet Shimon's numbers at the beginning of Bamidbar. They're among the highest, down to 22,000, which is as small as Shevet Levi. It's the smallest Shevet by the end of the road. And evidently, this is where many of them are killed. What is the biggest challenge to Moshe's leadership? So you can have a contest. You could say it's Korach, Datan and Aviram. By the way, there's Korach. And Ubnei Korach lo meitu, as part of that story. And so we understand why Korach's mentioned in our piece. You could also say it's Datan and Aviram, which is, of course, from Reuven. You could say it is Benot Moab, which is led by Zimri ben Salu and the rest of Shevet Shimon. But you could argue that perhaps the biggest challenge to Moshe's leadership took place not in a not in as confrontational a manner, and certainly not in a belligerent manner, but when B'nai Reuven and B'nai Gad come to Moshe and say, we don't want to cross. We're basically seceding from the nation. And finally, they reorient things so they're not seceding from the nation, and the Adrabah, they have to come in as the vanguard. Now step back and notice, where does Moshe get all of his challenges from? All of his challenges had come from inside Shevet Levi, Shevet Reuven, and Shevet Shimon. There's nobody in Shevet Yehuda that challenges Moshe that we see ever in the Torah. Nobody from Yisachar, Zvulun, or Dan, or Naphtali. We don't know who Eldad and Medad are from, and I don't even know that that was a challenge. We don't know what Shevet they're from. But when there are individuals or groups that challenge Moshe Rabbeinu's leadership, consistently, they are either from Reuven, Shimon, or inside of Shevet Levi. So let's roll back and look at our parsha with fresh eyes. Watch how it starts. Hashem tells Moshe, go speak to Paro, and he's going to let B'nai Yisrael go. And what does Moshe say? B'nai Yisrael don't listen to me. How will Paro hear me? Aras Fatayim will leave aside. And then what does Hashem do? Hashem commands Moshe to go to B'nai Yisrael and to Paro and get B'nai Yisrael out. And then what do we hear? Here's who Moshe Rabbeinu has to face. That's what this is a list of. Look who Moshe Rabbeinu has to face. He has to face people who are going to say, I'm from Reuven. What am I going to listen to somebody from Levi? I'm from Shimon. What am I going to listen to somebody from Levi? I am from an older child in Shevet Levi. This is presenting not people who in the future are going to be important. That's secondary. This is presenting the immediate challenge that Moshe faces when he comes to liberate B'nai Israel and persuade them to follow him, persuade them to unite behind him. This is who he has to face. And therefore, we start with Reuven, because Reuven is going to be a source of some trouble, both individually and as a Shevet, Datan and Aviram and their henchmen, and Shevet Reuven when they want to secede. Shevet Shimon is going to ultimately lead to the biggest catastrophe after Chet HaMeraglim, which is Benot Moav. And within Shevet Levi are going to be the seeds of challenge to Moshe and of sorrow to Moshe. The death of Nadav and Abihu, the role of Mishael and Elzaphan, and that, and of course, Korach. So what I'd like to propose is that the list that we see towards the beginning of this parasha is not a genealogy per se. It is a presentation of the challenge to Moshe Rabbeinu as he's being commanded to go to B'nai Israel after the first failure that we saw at the end of Parashat Shemot, and setting him up, presenting for us kind of a scope of what his career is going to look like and the challenges that he will face throughout his career that will all emanate from those who feel that they have inborn inherent rights over Moshe Rabbeinu, over his Shevet, and over his family. And these are the challenges that he's going to face, and that ultimately, as we see every step of the way, he faces successfully, literally, Be'ezrat Hashem, but challenges nonetheless, and I think that that's what the point of this list is.